Now we will listen to Matthew Arrett's testimony.
That people who seem intelligent, you're like, how could so many of my friends, my family members, people I know who are so intelligent, in the sense that they're educated, some of them have PhDs, and why is it that they don't have an ability to think about conspiracy? Why do they just emotionally, intellectually break down?
If you are starting to feel like the forces controlling the governments of the West are out to get you, then you are either a paranoid nut job or a stubborn realist. For the former, the tinfoil hat-wearing strata of conspiracy theorists waiting in a bunker for aliens to either strike down or save society from the shape-shifting lizard people, your choices are pretty clear. For the latter, the more rational, free-thinking skeptics, a darker but more real world of shadow governments and assassinated patriots takes shape, and certain conclusions tend to arise. The first conclusion you would likely arrive at is that the United States government was just put through its first coup in over 58 years.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it.
Yes, what happened in 1963 was a coup.
We are living in the wake, the end point of a system, a very artificial system that was only created through the murders of many leading people from 1961, 62, 63, all the way to 1968 and a little beyond, from within the United States, but also internationally. These are figures like John F. Kennedy, Malcolm X, Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr. We've had the coups during the 60s of people like Kwame Nkrumah, who had been working with John F. Kennedy to really create a situation where Africa would be able to industrialize, have full spectrum economics. He was ousted in 67.
Although it is becoming a bit dangerous to speak such words aloud in polite society, Nancy Pelosi's official biographer, Molly Ball, recently penned a scandalous article which admitted to this conspiracy, saying,
"Even though it sounds like a paranoid fever dream, a well-funded cabal of powerful people ranging across industries and ideologies is working together behind the scenes to influence perceptions, change rules and laws, steer media coverage, and control the flow of information."
Lest you think that this was a subversion of democracy, Ball informs us that
they were not rigging the election, they were fortifying it.
Many of the political figures whom you believed were serving those who elected them into office actually served the interests of a clique of technocrats and billionaires lusting over the destruction of Western civilization under something called a Great Reset. Where this was brushed off as an unfounded conspiracy theory not long ago, even Canada's Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, a neo-Nazi supporting Rhodes Scholar, decided to become a trustee of the World Economic Forum just weeks ago. In this role, Freeland joins fellow Oxford technocrat Mark Carney in their mutual endeavor to be a part of the new movement to decarbonize civilization and make feudalism cool again. Lastly, you might notice that you're having arrived at these conclusions is itself increasingly becoming a form of thought crime, punishable in a variety of distasteful ways, elaborated by a series of unprecedented new emergency regulations that propose extending the definition of terrorism. Those implicated under the new definition will be those broad swaths of citizens of Western nations who don't agree with the operating beliefs of the ruling oligarchy. Already, a 60-day review of the U.S. military is underway to purge the armed forces of all such thought criminals, while McCarthyite legislation has been drafted to cleanse all government jobs of conspiracy theorists. Another startling announcement from the National Terrorism Advisory Bulletin that domestic terrorists include
ideologically motivated, violent extremists with objections to the exercise of government authority and perceived grievances fueled by false narratives.
While not yet fully codified into law, though it will be, if not nipped in the bud soon, you can be sure that things are certainly moving fast as, before our very eyes, the right to free speech is being torn to shreds by means of censorship across social media and the internet, canceling all opinions deemed unacceptable to the ruling class. Biden's new addition to the Department of Homeland Security is a bizarre figure named Cass Sunstein, who famously described exactly what 2022 was going to look like in his infamous 2008 report, Conspiracy Theories, co-authored with Harvard Law School's Adrian Vermeule. In this underappreciated study, the duo foresaw the greatest threat to the ruling elite took the form of conspiracy theorizing within the American population, using as examples of this delusion the idea that the government had anything to do with the murders of John F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr., or the planning and execution of 9/11.
Cass Sunstein, he represents economic behaviorists who really are of the view, just like Pavlov or B.F. Skinner, they've saturated their minds in this way of looking at the universe and at human beings as being just mechanistic impulse creatures. They don't believe in things as behaviors. They think that it's just behavior. That's all we are. And our behavior can be modified, can be mapped and modified by the alpha class of higher animals, which are them, the enlightened elite. And things like justice, intention, goals, ideas, the soul, these are all metaphysical principles that they say are non-scientific. We are just neurons. We're just psychochemical neural activity driven by Darwinian impulses to survive, to spread our seed, which, you know, gets rid of free will, because it's not your free will causing you to make decisions in life. It's your genetic drive, the wiring and the program of nature to spread the seed in a fight for survival in a universe of diminishing returns and entropy.
The fact that Vermeule has made a legal career arguing that laws should be interpreted not by the intentions of lawgivers, but rather according to cost-benefit analysis, gives us a useful insight into the deranged mind of a technocrat and the delusional reasoning that denies the very thing which has shaped literally all of human history. In their scholarly essay, the authors wrote,
"The existence of both domestic and foreign conspiracy theories, we suggest, is no trivial matter, posing real risks to the government's anti-terrorism policies, whatever the latter may be."
After establishing his case for the threat of conspiracies, Sunstein says that
"the best response consists in cognitive infiltration of extremist groups."
Not one to simply draw criticisms, the proactive Sunstein laid out five possible strategies which the social engineers managing the population could deploy to defuse this growing threat, saying,
1. The government might ban conspiracy theorizing. 2. The government might impose some kind of tax, financial or otherwise, on those who disseminate such theories. 3. Government might itself engage in counter-speech, marshaling arguments to discredit conspiracy theories. 4. Government might formally hire credible private parties to engage in counter-speech. 5. Government might engage in informal communication with such parties, encouraging them to help.
We'll let you think about which of these prescriptions were put into action over the last 12 years. As an economic behaviorist and lawyer arguing that all human rights should be extended to animals, blurring the lines separating human dynamics from the law of the jungle, as any fascist must. Sunstein has spent decades trying to model human behavior with computer simulations in an effort to scientifically manage such behavior. As outlined in his book Nudge, co-authored with Nobel Prize-winning behaviorist Richard Thaler, Sunstein discovered that people tend to organize their behavior patterns around certain fundamental drives, such as the pursuit of pleasure, avoidance of pain, and certain Darwinian drives for sex, popularity, desire for conformity, desire for novelty, and greed. One of the key principles of economic behaviorism, as seen in such popular manuals as Freakonomics, Nudge, Predictably Irrational, The Wisdom of Crowds, and Animal Spirits, is that humans are biologically determined due to their Darwinian impulses, but, unlike other animals, have the fatal flaw of being fundamentally irrational at their core. Since humans are fundamentally irrational, says the behaviorist, it is requisite that an enlightened elite impose order upon society while maintaining the illusion of freedom of choice from below. This is the underlying assumption of Karl Popper's open society doctrine, which was fed to Popper's protege, George Soros, and which animates Soros's general theory of reflexivity and his Oxford-based Institute for New Economic Thinking, INET. This was at the heart of Obama's science czar, John Holdren's call for world government in his 1977 Ecoscience, co-written with his mentor Paul Ehrlich, where the young misanthrope envisioned a future utopic world governed by a scientifically managed masterclass, saying,
"Perhaps those agencies combined with UNEP and the United Nations Populations Agencies might eventually be developed into a planetary regime, sort of an international super-agency for population, resources, and environment. Such a comprehensive planetary regime could control the development, administration, conservation, and distribution of all natural resources, renewable or non-renewable."
The caveat? If Darwinian impulses mixed with irrational animal spirits were truly all that animated those systems which behaviors wish to map and manipulate, aka nudge, with rewards, punishments, then a scientific priesthood would indeed be a viable and perhaps necessary way to organize the world. Fortunately, reality is a bit more elegant and dignified than behaviorists wish to admit. On a closer inspection of history, we find countless instances where people shape their individual and group behavior around sets of ideas that transcend controllable material impulses. When this happens, those individuals or groups tend to resist adapting to environments created for them. This incredible phenomenon is witnessed empirically in the form of the American Revolution, Warsaw Ghetto Uprisings, civil rights movements, and even some bold manifestations of anti-lockdown protests that have taken place around the world. Among the most troublesome of these variables which upset computer models are conscience, truth, intentions, soul, honor, God, justice, patriotism, dignity, and freedom. Whenever individuals shape their identities around these very real, though immaterial, aka metaphysical, principles, they cannot be nudged towards predetermined decisions that defy reason and morality. Adherence to these principles also tends to afford thinking people an important additional edge of creative insight necessary to cut through sophistry, the false explanatory narratives that attempt to hide lies behind the appearance of truth. As witnessed on multiple occasions throughout history, such individuals who value the health of their souls over the intimidating and extremely malleable force of popular opinion will often decide to sacrifice personal comfort and even their lives in order to defend those values which their minds and consciences deem important. These rare but invaluable outliers will often resist policies that threaten to undo their freedoms or undermine the basis of their society's capacity to produce food and energy for their children and grandchildren. What is worse is that their example is often extremely contagious, causing other members of the sheep class to believe that they too are human and endowed with unalienable rights, which should be defended. Whenever this type of thinking is done, carefully crafted narratives fed to the masses by an enlightened elite will often fail in their powers to persuade, since seekers after truth soon come to realize that ideas and intentions, aka conspiracies, shape our past, present, and future. When the dominating intention shaping society's trajectories in conformity with natural law, humanity tends to improve. Freedoms increase, culture matures, and evil loses its hold. Inversely, when the intentions animating history are out of conformity with natural law, the opposite happens, as societies lose their moral and material fitness to survive and slip ever more quickly into dark ages. While sitting in a jail in Birmingham, Alabama in 1963, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. described this reality eloquently when he said,
"A just law is a man-made code that squares with the moral law or the law of God. An unjust law is a code that is out of harmony with the moral law. Any law that uplifts human personality is just. Any law that degrades human personality is unjust. One is not only a legal, but a moral responsibility to obey just laws. Conversely, one has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws."
From Plato's organization of his academy and efforts to shape a philosopher king to beat the forces of the Persian Empire, to Cicero's efforts to save the Roman Republic, to Augustine's battles to save the soul of Christianity, all the way to our present age, conspiracies for the good and counter-conspiracies for evil have shaped history. If one were to begin an investigation into history without an understanding that ideas and intentions cause the trajectory of history, then one would become incapable of understanding anything essential about one's own reality. Unfortunately, among history professors dominant in today's world, this is becoming the standard practice, to discount conspiracy. The truth of this claim will be apparent to any serious truth seeker to discover for themselves. It is irrelevant that behaviorists and other fascists wish their victims to believe that history just happens simply because random, short-sighted impulses kinetically drive events on a timeline. If you question World Health Organization narratives on COVID-19, or doubt the use of vaccines produced by organizations like AstraZeneca due to their ties to eugenics organizations, then you are a delusional conspiracy theorist.
Many of the organizations working with Oxford's AstraZeneca are things like the Galton Institute, which was just the British Eugenics Society renamed in 1989, or the Human Society for the Human Sterilization Society for Human Betterment, which was renamed the Engender Health in the 80s. That was renamed earlier. That was a really bad name.
If you doubt that global warming is caused by carbon dioxide, or that implementing the Paris Climate Accords may cause more damage to humanity than climate change ever could, then you must be a conspiracy theorist. If you believe that the U.S. government just went through a regime change coordinated by something called the Deep State, then you run the risk of being labeled a delusional threat to the general welfare, deserving of the sort of treatment doled out to any typical terrorist. It appears that the many comforts we have taken for granted over the past 50-year drunken stupor called globalization are quickly coming to an end, and thankfully not one, but two opposing intentions for what the new operating system will be are actively vying for control. This clash was witnessed in stark terms during the January 2021 Davos summit, where Xi Jinping and Putin's call for a new system of win-win cooperation, multipolarity, and long-term development offset the unipolar, zero-sum ideologues of the West seeking to undo the foundations of industrial civilization. Any way you look at it, conspiracies for good and for evil do exist now, as they have from time immemorial. The only question is, which conspiracy do you want to be a part of?
If humanity is organized by ideas and intentions that are either in accord with natural law or in perversions of natural law, which ideas do we want to allow govern our existence and our identities as we develop over the ensuing months and years ahead, right? Because you can only participate in either conspiracy if you have understanding of the variables at play. And that takes effort, mind work. People can't be just voyeurs in this process, but you have to have real knowledge or else you're going to be a good person maybe, but as soon as you go in with ignorance in the process you're trying to intervene on, you will fall for all sorts of traps. You will make bad judgments. You're going to get yourself hurt, others hurt. It happens left and right, and that's a big part of these operations. Most people who are acting as operatives for the enemy don't even realize it. They're often good people. They haven't taken the time to discipline their minds to think about what they know and what they don't know, what they think is true, but they haven't proven to be true. So they have to make the act of cognition more rigorous and really love the truth a lot more and spend a lot more time reading and researching and then act. So like Sun Yat-sen, the first president of China, made the point, learning is hard, action is easy. But then your power of insight, your wisdom is gonna be enhanced so much more when you take that time and then go into policy discussions, run for office on a municipal, federal level. Like, everybody should be thinking seriously about becoming leaders right now.